Blog Talk Radio.
I was put on this planet for one reason, to play hockey.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
Reg, that reminds me. I was coaching in Omaha in 1948, and Eddie Shore sends me this guy that's a terrible masturbator, you know, couldn't control himself. Well, he would get deliberate penalties so he could get into the penalty box all by himself and damned if he wouldn't.
Oh,
George. What was his name?
Pull my pants down a little bit and show him the Hockey Night logo.
Hey!
Hey!
Who wants to have some fun?
Such a fine line between stupid and clever.
We're men, okay? That means a few things. We like to shit with the door open. We talk about pussy. We go on riverboat gambling trips. We make our own beef jerky. That's what we do.
All right, the Third and Onion Radio here on this, back again here on this Tuesday night, November 23rd, 2010. It is 8:01 here in Chicago. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, creator, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com here on blogtalkradio.com / thethirdmanin. And a whole host of other things. Superstar, are you with us?
I am, buddy. How you doing?
Hectic. Pretty doing all right, though. Been a while since you've been with us.
You know what? It's only been a week off, but it definitely seems like it was way longer than that.
A lot of things have been going on in the hockey world. A lot of things have been going on in your world. Maybe you could get us a little bit up to date on what the Superstar has been up to. You were in Iowa this past weekend?
I was. As you have witnessed before, Iowa City, a great place to travel to. I don't know if I'd ever want to take up residence there, but...
No offense to anybody from Iowa.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to take up residence there. For those of you who may be listening that do live in Iowa City, I apologize. It's a great place to go and visit and take in the local establishments and scenery and then get the fuck out of Dodge.
Boost the economy.
Yeah, boost the economy and then get the hell out of Dodge. So that's what we did. We boosted the local economy in the pub area more than anything else. And, it was a good time.
It's the least that Chicagoans can do. I mean, people are always coming from Iowa boosting the Chicago economy. We should go and do our part to return the favor.
Right. And Black, I know you've also had this terrifying thought when you wake up after a long day of, maybe a couple extra beverages, and that is the first thought you think of when you open your eyes is, oh, crap, how much money did I spend last night? And, I was pleasantly surprised with the amount of money that I spent in the bars. However, I am not happy about spending $42 at Jimmy John's.
How many people did you bring to Jimmy John's? $42?
I don't remember.
It's not Quiznos.
No. I don't know.
Although sometimes, I live down the street from a Mr. Submarine, and I think, at least on the north side of town, and I'm more northwest than I am north, but, Mr. Submarines are kind of few and far between, but I eat at Mr. Submarine probably twice a week, and I somehow manage as one person to walk out of there spending $10.08 every time I go there. So.
Yeah. So,
if you had three other people, I could see how this would happen.
Yeah. It's, unfortunately, in the state that we were in, nobody has any recollection of how many people were actually sitting at the table. So as soon as I finish piecing that together, I'll let you know. But somehow managed to spend basically the same amount at Jimmy John's as I did the bars all day. So,
and, of course, you were there for, how you say, the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Ohio State Buckeyes?
I was.
Tailgate.
Great tailgate. Yeah, it was a great tailgate. And, you know, it was a different location from where you and I have previously tailgated there. And, you know, the lot was great. The people were super friendly, got along with everyone. You know, it was more of an adult crowd. And, you know, so the Ohio State guys and girls were kind of blending in a little bit and not too much harassment going on. But the problem we did have, and we checked the weather before we go, and, of course, it says it's going to be 50 and, you know, partly cloudy. And we get there, and it's sunny as hell. But it's cold, and we're tailgating, like, on top of a hill. So the 30-mile-an-hour wind that was going through, there was no stopping it. So you were just freezing beyond belief in spurts of this tailgate. But, you know, nothing a case of, you know, low light and amongst other things wasn't going to solve.
You know, I was listening to someone else's show this week, and I heard something about a hot, very attractive female who had a special talent. Do you recall this?
She did. You know, yeah, the best part about this was it was a group that was next to us, and I don't know how old she was, but she was cute, and she's probably in her, you know, upper 20s, if not younger 30s. And I look over, and all I hear, which made the story even better, she goes, "Okay, but this is the last time." And I turn over, and I'm like, "Okay, I got it." You know, when somebody says that, you got to watch whatever they're going to do.
Right.
And you know, it's just kind of like, okay, this is going to be good. You know, what is this? What's, you know, what's this show all about? And I look over, and she proceeds to drink about a half of a beer through her nose.
That's hot.
And yeah, and as people around us were saying, was, you know, she's way too cute to be doing this sort of thing. You know, this isn't a trailer park trash, you know, some hillbilly. You know, this is actually a, you know, some very educated, very, you know, cute, normal female who is drinking beers through her nose. So I asked her, how did she learn? You know, because that's a special talent, Black. I don't know if you can do it. I wouldn't even try it.
Not but like I asked her, went through my nose, no.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think even if I tried, I'd be able to do this. So I asked her, I go, how did you learn that you had this talent? You know, where did this? She goes, oh, I just learned it about 10 minutes ago from that guy over there. And we all died. So the question is,
did you get this girl's phone number? Did anybody get this girl's phone? I know you're a married man now, superstar. Delicate ground, but did anyone get this female's phone number, and can I have it?
I don't know if the buddy who I was with got her phone number, but I do know that he is now friends with her on Facebook. So there may be still some hope left for you, Block. And I don't know. I know after watching this for about the eighth time, our buddy did ask her to marry him, so I don't know how that proposal ever went, but I know that's still on the table.
All right, I want to get to more of your travels in just a second, but tonight on the show, I don't really know, probably going to be a condensed version of tonight's show. I've been doing many other things, including I did get to sleep today, so we're kind of, it's going to be off the top of my head kind of a show this week. But a lot of emails about a lot of different things in today's post over at thethirdmanin.com. People have thoughts and complaints and issues with things I wrote about the hockey news, that publication that they put out, best players of all time by position. I had some thoughts on there, including the Hall of Fame, Blackhawks, that may or may not be qualified to be Hall of Famers and stuff like that, and also, I guess, Dustin Byfuglien. You are also a superstar, I guess, the week before. I mean, how does a man get married, and then all of a sudden he's out and about traveling every other weekend doing things? Was the special lady with you?
No. She didn't go with me on either trip. And how
so she is a special lady.
Yes. And so how this came to pass, I really don't even know. But yeah, the week before, took in Michigan Notre Dame hockey at Yost Arena, another great place to see a game. Block,
very small
building.
It's a very small building, I said.
It is. It's a very small building, very intimate, if you may. I don't know how much college hockey, you know, as you've gotten older, you've been able to take in. But if you get a chance, I highly recommend it. It's such a different atmosphere than anything we pay attention to on a normal basis, even if it's, you know, the NHL, the AHL, or, you know, any of the junior, you know, ranks. It's just such a different atmosphere in the building where you have student sections going nuts and, you know, the game seems so wide open because you guys just, you know, move the puck so well for the age that they are. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to take in. And then the following night, you know, we spent at Hockey Town Cafe followed by Joe Louis Arena. And let me tell you, after being able to grow up going to the Chicago Stadium and now being able to take in all the amenities of the United Center, Joe Louis Arena is a dump.
Yeah, it's one of the older. I'm not sure. Is it the? I don't want to say. Someone will correct me. It may be the oldest building in the league now. It's certainly one of.
You know what? I'll actually correct you. We had this conversation when we were there. There was a group of people in back of us in the beer line where that exact conversation came up. And there's only three buildings, really two, depending on how you look at renovations, and that's obviously Madison Square Garden, which has obviously been renovated more than, you know, a couple of times. Nassau Coliseum is older than the Joe, and the building in Edmonton is also older than the Joe. So those are the only ones in the current NHL that are actually older than Joe Louis Arena, and it definitely shows. That place isn't very big, and the amenities are severely lacking.
You saw the Red Wings and the Colorado Avalanche, correct?
I did.
How was that for a rivalry game? Which is, I mean, it's a rivalry that's lost its luster, certainly. But it sold out. Was it legitimately sold out?
Yeah, it was legitimately sold out. It was lacking in luster. You know, you think, you know, I think you and I both, when you think Colorado, Detroit, you think back to the golden days of that rivalry, and you want it to almost come back because those were such great games. It was a good game. The Wings took a commanding lead, mid to early third period, and at that point we kind of walked around and took in the rest of the sights of the Joe and the concourse and all that it has to offer, which I have a great story on that you will love. But it was a good game. You know, it wasn't a game that you kind of said, oh my God, look at the pace of this game. But, it was a good game. It was fun to see, it was fun to sit there and watch a game where you didn't really have a rooting interest, where you could almost just sit back and just enjoy the play for what it is.
Back to Notre Dame, of course, you got to see, being at Yost Arena, you would have seen Joe Lavin and Stephen Johns, Blackhawks prospects, actually paired together on the blue line. Your thoughts on those two?
I thought they played great. And, I did take special note of that, like you mentioned, being paired up on the back end. I thought they were going to be a little bit bigger. Obviously, you know, you could read what they're listed as, but we all know that's so accurate nowadays.
Lavin is tiny. Joe Lavin is tiny.
Yeah. They both, you know, neither one of the guys were really posing. They were out there in all situations, shorthanded and on the power play. So I thought they played well. Obviously, I don't get to see him much. It was only the first time I've seen either one of those guys, but do I expect them to eventually make it and be a productive member in, you know, AHL, NHL. I don't know, but
I've only seen one Notre Dame game this year, and Stephen Johns didn't play a lot. Like, if you, I know that I didn't prep you on this, but if you had to, off the top of your head, one NHL defenseman, current, former, notable, that you would compare him to based off of seeing him play for, you know, whatever, 15 to 20 minutes that night?
You know, that's tough. I'd almost want to say, and obviously this is very limited exposure. Like I said, I've only one game. He could be a poor man's Cam Barker.
Okay.
You know, and that's what he is, you know, at
that's
certain
not
level.
But, praise, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this is you know, a kid that has a lot of developing to do. Am I saying this kid won't be better than Cam Barker? No. You know, am I saying he's going to be better than Cam Barker? No. You know, I don't have enough watching experience of him to be able to make that comparison. But I think he's going to be somewhere in that range.
All right.
But, Block, before we move on, I got a great story about Joe Louis Arena. And I know you've been to many stadiums, whether it be baseball, football, hockey, throughout the country and Canada. The question I have for you is, have you ever had the opportunity to pour your own beer at a stadium?
Aside from a Schaumburg Flyer game?
Yeah.
That was only because I knew the girl?
Yeah, aside
from
that.
Very well, too. No, I have not.
At Joe Louis Arena, they have this little bar area, and you go up and you pay. So I go up and I say, can I get a large Miller Lite? She rings me up, and then she hands me a cup, and it's empty. And, you know, at this point of the evening, I had had many beverages, and I was like, no, I actually want the beer in the cup. You know, I don't want just an empty cup. So I look over, and there's about 9 taps, and instead of facing in, where, like, there'd be somebody else there pouring your beer and then handing it to you, the taps are actually facing you, so you actually fill up your own beer. And I asked the woman, I go, this is a great idea on your part. I go, but what's it to stop me from filling it up halfway, pounding a couple of those before I fill it up for good and then walk out? And she just looks at me, she goes, I don't care what you do. And I was like, hey. So that's what I did. I filled it up a little bit, chugged it, and then filled it up for good and then walked out. And I was like, that is the greatest drinking experience in a stadium I think I've ever had.
Road trip.
Yeah. So if you get to the Joe, there's the one bright spot for you.
I have been to the Joe and I've not had that experience.
You got to get back.
Oh, okay. All right. The Blackhawks 3-game road trip. First part of the circus trip. 3 games in the books. Another 3 this week in California. I mean, everybody knows about it by now. The Blackhawks started off in Edmonton 5-0, whitewashing of the Oilers in a redemption game of sorts. The Blackhawks dropping 2 games somewhat embarrassingly to the worst team in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league, definitely the West. The Edmonton Oilers, a lot of talent on that team, a lot of young guys. But, you know, we'll talk about more of that about that in a minute. But and then the Friday night in Calgary, it was just an embarrassing loss all the way around. The Blackhawks not giving a professional effort in that game on Friday night. You know, Blackhawks can get away with that sometimes. You know, they can get away with that more so. Not that they did it on Wednesday night, but a team like Edmonton. But Calgary's got a little bit more balance to their lineup, which they got guys that have that can do some different things. They'll force the Blackhawks to battle more, earn the puck possession and things like that. And so you can't just not show up against a team like Calgary if they plan on attending the game. And, you know, some things of note in that game. I think it was, you know, at the end of that one, I don't know if you saw the game, Superstar, but the very end of that game, Marty Turco giving up sort of joining his team on the airport shuttle about 5 minutes before the game ended, which made that game was 4-1 late before it got really ugly, with about 5 minutes left in that third period. But so it ends 7-2, and then the next night in Vancouver, the Blackhawks, blow Vancouver out of the building 7-1 at what's now known as Rogers Arena. Your thoughts on those three games of what you saw?
You know what? I did not catch the Calgary game. I did catch the other two. And, the Oiler game, I think, was the key to obviously the first game of the road trip and to get the road trip off, started on the right foot. And a win, you mentioned a redemption win, but a win they just absolutely needed to have. I mean, if you don't win that game, you could look back at the season, see where you finished up, and I think there's always games where you could say, wow, if we could have beaten this awful team back in November, twice at home, that's 4 points. All of a sudden, we're two slots up in the playoffs, or we're in the playoffs. So I think it was a game that they really needed to have. I mean, if you lose three straight to the Oilers, that doesn't say a lot, but I think they came out and played outstanding, front to back, and really just showed you what they can be as a team, shut down defensively, and thought they moved the puck really well as well. So I thought that was the key. And the Vancouver game was just another one of those. It's another game where you say, God, why isn't this team showing up like this every night? Obviously, Roberto Luongo doesn't play in that game. Either does Marty Turco. So, little switches in the goaltending up there, which I'm sure you'll have a thought on. I don't know if you heard the Vancouver media saying that, Luongo and the whole Blackhawks up there give them a rest versus these guys or not. But, obviously they played great. It's a 2-1 start. I think it's important, a lot of tough games coming up, Kings and the Ducks primarily, who always seem to give the Hawks fits out there. So it's a good start to the road trip. It really is. However, you got to end it. You got to finish it. You go out and you drop the next three, all of a sudden it's not such a great road trip. But they're on the right path, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the thing about the Edmonton game is the Blackhawks, I didn't even think the Blackhawks were that impressive in the Edmonton game. They went out and they won a road game. The thing that was most encouraging about that game is that they finally had a game where they had the puck more, and they won that game strictly based on the fact that they had the puck they had possession of the puck all night. And I think the thing, watching Edmonton, I think the problem with Edmonton at this stage, and you have to look upstairs to Steve Tambellini and Kevin Lowe, is that they have too many of the same type of players. It's real easy to sort of take over a game from the Edmonton Oilers and assert yourself physically against a team like that and sort of give them problems. They have, like I said, they have a lot of talent, and it's easy to just say, well, they're inexperienced, and yeah, Sean Horkoff is not a number one center, and Dustin Penner doesn't show up every night and assert himself and all that kind of thing. It's easy to say all those things, but the fact of the matter is Edmonton just has too many of the same type of players, and they're nowhere near as good as the Blackhawks' same type of players, in the top two lines. So, and certainly on defense, Edmonton is they probably have two or three guys on that defense that aren't NHL players, but they are, because Edmonton's defense is so poor. So, the Blackhawks went in and they got the win. We asked them to go in, and we talked about this last week on the show with Dieter Kurtenbach. We asked them to go in and have a dominating win, start off the road trip on the right, like you said, on the right foot. They did that. Great. Friday night is inexcusable. I cannot excuse Friday night based on what we saw Saturday, because this is what this team kind of is. I don't think that, two wins wrapped around that effort on Friday prove anything to me. I'll note the two, specifically the Vancouver game. I mean, the Blackhawks got up to play in Vancouver. it was similar to the Edmonton game, just in the sense of the Blackhawks found a team that was willing to play the game that they wanted to play, and Vancouver really thought that they were going to trade punches with the Blackhawks, and that still isn't what they should be doing, because, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is the Blackhawks still have, we know this, they still have Hossa, Kane, Taves, Sharp, and those guys are better than, I would say, 9 times out of 10, you put those guys on the ice against the Sedins, Alex Burrows, Mason Raymond, Ryan Kessler, and Mikael Samuelsson, the Blackhawks are going to win that battle. If that's what the game comes down to, the Blackhawks are going to win that battle every time. And no matter if Duncan Keith's not playing well or not, Duncan Keith's still, you know, better than Dan Hamhuis and Keith Ballard, and Brent Seabrook's still a better defenseman than Kevin Bieksa. And the wild card there is what are Edler and Ehrhoff doing. But the fact of the matter is Vancouver still, and this goes to Alain Vigneault, still cannot figure out how to beat the Blackhawks. What they should do is just watch what Calgary did the night before. I mean, you have to make the Blackhawks play a tight. Watch the Nashville Predators play the Blackhawks. You got to tighten things up. You have to be very careful in when you take your chances. You have to put a lot of pressure on the D, clog up that neutral zone, and force the Blackhawks to muscle out a victory. Make them earn their space on the ice and force them to muscle out a victory. The Blackhawks, like I said, like the Edmonton Oilers, have a lot of the same type of guys. And if you just want to play a finesse game with the Blackhawks, you're going to lose that battle, especially on a night where the Blackhawks are engaged. They're excited to play. They're motivated. For whatever reason, that's been an issue. You could list the reasons that you think that are there for them to not be motivated at the highest level any given night. But the fact is that they're having issues with that. Vancouver didn't catch him on one of those nights. They played the trading strikes game with the Blackhawks, and they lost. And they're going to lose most every time they play that game. Go back to the playoffs last year. When they played those games inside the United Center that they won, how did they play? 2 years ago, they played boring, shut down, suffocating hockey against the Blackhawks, and they won. I don't know what happens to Vancouver when they go home and they open things up and they try to please that crowd in Vancouver. What happens to them? They always get themselves into trouble. And I don't know you have to blame Roberto Luongo to some extent, but it starts with what's going on in front of them. And until they clear up what's going on in front of them, I don't think that you can ultimately blame Luongo. But, you know, I don't know what we can learn. I mean, based on all that, everything that I just said, I don't know what there is to learn from those three games other than, like what I said, you want to trade shots with the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks still have elite talent that when they're motivated and ready to play, they will burn you. And you want to play that game with them, you're doing the Blackhawks a favor. You want to make them earn their space on the ice. You want to bang it out with them. And you want to make them, you know, do their stuff in tight quarters and all that, like what Calgary did on Friday. Because it just wasn't a case of, well, the Blackhawks didn't show up and Calgary did. That wasn't it entirely. You know, you have to go back and watch that game on Friday and really dissect it to understand what was going on out there. It's not just, well, the Blackhawks didn't show up. What the fuck is this? There was more going on out there than that. But, I don't know. I just, this week is, to me, are three games that we'll see just how good and how engaged the Blackhawks are at this point, because, you know, San Jose has their issues on the blue line. They're not very good on the blue line. They're okay. They're getting Douglas Murray back, which is a big deal. Douglas Murray may not be one of the best defensemen in the league, but he's a big deal inserted on that line as opposed to him not being in the lineup. He's a big physical guy who's going to can move a little bit too. So I think that's an issue. Todd McClellan is sort of being coy about who he's starting in net. I heard all weekend that it was going to be Niemi. So unless something's changing, then, I mean, I expect it to be Niemi. Niemi played on Thursday, I believe. I wrote it on the site this morning. It seems like 3 days ago. But Niemi last played 2 games ago in Dallas. San Jose had a late 4-2 lead. They blew it. Not entirely Niemi's fault. They allowed Dallas 2 late goals, one by Mike Ribeiro to tie the game, and then 2.5 minutes into overtime, Brendan Morrow just completely stripped the puck, came up from behind Danny Boyle, was standing behind Niemi, behind the net, just completely, takes the puck away from him, dishes it to Ribeiro, who walks out in front of the net, walks around Mark-Edward Vlasic like he's not even there, and then, Niemi goes to sprawl to sort of poke check Ribeiro before he has a chance to get rid of a backhand chance, because that was what he was going for, and didn't work. They blew that game. Nidamaki started their last game, but I expect Niemi. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense for it to be anybody else. And Niemi should play. I mean, it's a chance for him to prove whatever he feels that he needs to prove. And for the Blackhawks, I mean, not that they're out to show up their old netminder, but I think it's good for the Blackhawks that Niemi would be in there, because, it's a chance. Like I said last year, the point that I always made last year, that first game when Edmonton came into town, when Joe Quenneville made, in my estimation, made a major mistake that had major ramifications when he chose to hide Cristobal Huey and Nikolai Hobby-Boulin's return. And he started Niemi instead. And, you want the players on the ice. They like, even if they like everybody, even if they love Antti Niemi, Marty Turco's their guy now. They're playing for Marty Turco. They want Marty Turco to win that game. So I expect it to be Turco versus Niemi, and I expect it to be a fantastic hockey game. And I expect the Blackhawks to be very engaged in wanting to win that game for Marty Turco, because he's their guy now. No matter how much you like Niemi, when you're in that room, you're playing for your guy. And I think it's a great opportunity. You talk about, everybody is so, I think so mixed up and somewhat, misconstrues what, team unity is. It's not going to the bars on a road trip and hanging out, a little bit of that, but this is an opportunity. This San Jose game, this is what we're talking about. Growing up to, as a team and finding that cohesiveness and that unity. This is an opportunity. Marty Turco against the guy the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup with, Antti Niemi. This is an opportunity for this group. They look at their goaltender, all the things that'll be written by in the newspaper, said on the radio, said on blogs about Niemi and Turco and who's better and why one's here and why one's not. This is an opportunity for the Blackhawks to stand up for their goalie. All that, put aside, this is a chance for them to stand up for their goalie and help him win this game. That's what creates team unity in that locker room, for real. Not made-up stuff that people pontificate about. This is real stuff. This is playing for your goalie and winning a game for your goalie. This is a huge game on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, and a huge chance, huge opportunity for the Blackhawks to grow a little bit, this group to grow a little bit as a team and develop some kind of identity in that room.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. This is, I think right at the end you hit it perfectly where you said to grow as a team. We've all talked about how with all the changes that have gone on, all the different, bodies in the room, and even this far into the season, how much this team may or may not have totally gelled together with the short offseason, all the other crap you want to talk. But right now, we talked 2 weeks ago about how this is the point of the season where generally we find out what we have as a team, what this team is going to be. In this game right now against your Stanley Cup winning goaltender on the road against a team that you beat in the Western Conference Finals last year, this to date is the biggest game of the year without a doubt.
Yeah, and then moving on to Anaheim on Friday, the Blackhawks, and I want to point out that I did make a mistake today on the website. At least I think I did. I have to go back and check, but I realized after I posted today, when I was thinking about it, I didn't include the first game of the year in the statistics, the Blackhawks versus Anaheim. Not that it makes that bit of a difference, but I mean, the Blackhawks, not a very good team or good record versus Anaheim of late. I'm looking for the numbers right now, so I'm stalling. Well, what I wrote on the website anyway, I don't know. It may be one win short. But overall, since 2000, the Hawks' record versus the Ducks, overall, both home and away, 11-23-2. In Anaheim since the lockout, this number is correct, 6-14-0 in Anaheim since 2005.
That's not good. That's not good at all. And Brock, do you think, I mean, obviously the Ducks are a much better team than the Edmonton Oilers. But is this a game where you think that the Blackhawks can just come out and win on their talent? Just kind of go out and like you mentioned, assert themselves and kind of just take over the game?
Well, they can. I mean, they can do that if certain players are providing the aspects of the game that the Blackhawks are missing. I mean, what are they missing? They're missing that grit factor, guys that are going to go out and just take over a shift from time to time. There are those lulls in the game where guys sort of, you know what happens. I mean, when you're out there, there's those moments in the game where you're not as jacked up as you were shifts one and two of the game when you're trying to set the tone or a momentum. There are shifts where you go out there and you get lost in the ebb and flow of the game. It just happens. It's natural. There has to be guys on that bench that are willing and able to jump over those boards and go out and just take over a shift. It doesn't mean Jonathan Toews taking the puck from end to end and walking around guys and scoring a goal. No, that means go out there and boost the momentum of a team, boost the morale of a team. Not maybe necessarily the fight, but just go out and throw three or four checks, get to the front of the net, engage, maybe not do anything dirty, but get to the net and stir something up. There has to be a little bit of that. Now, who provides that?
I'm going to say, Brock, are you pining for Adam Burrish?
No, I'm not talking about Adam Burrish. I'm talking about Brian Bickle, who, you know, I mean, say what you want, but Brian Bickle was brought here, but he's on this team supposedly, or he should be, to replace Ben Eager. And whatever you want to think about Ben Eager, you know, he's a fourth liner on a great team, but he played an important role. At times, that role of a big physical 6'4", 6'3" guy on the left wing on your fourth line who can spot you shifts, you know, because he's good enough to skate with the Toews line for a shift or two a game when you need that spark. The Blackhawks don't have any of that. And that's one of their issues so far. The major issue is the fact that Duncan Keith, for the most part, hasn't played like the Duncan Keith that, you know, he's supposed to be, or he's alleged to be. And, you know, Patrick Kane hasn't been, you know, engaged, you know, very much. Marian Hossa was amazing the first seven games of the season ever since. He's been a little bit better lately, but ever since he's sort of gone away. I mean, those are the major factors. You always have to point to your best players. When anything's going wrong, you have to look at your elite players. Those are the guys who are supposed to be driving the bus. And, you know, but there are aspects of this team that I think, you know, the Blackhawks are missing, and they have to find those things. You know, there's not much flexibility to go out and make deals. And nobody that's hit the waiver wire has really attracted the Blackhawks to this point, because the guys that have hit the waiver wire to this point, I mean, Patrick O'Sullivan today was picked up by the Minnesota Wild, but Patrick O'Sullivan doesn't give the Blackhawks anything different than they already have, plus Patrick O'Sullivan is brutal defensively. So that doesn't help you. You know, I mean, unless Ben Eager hits re-entry waivers – You know, you don't, you know, I mean, there's very little flexibility the Blackhawks have, so it's got to come from within. You know, Jack Skilly's doing a great job on that fourth line, but he is a fourth liner. And the other thing that I wanted to mention that we pointed out, I pointed out last week with Dieter, is that Jack Skilly should be playing the left wing because it opens up his shooting angles. To whereas on the right wing, he's too formulaic in what he does. He's very tight over there. If you put him over on the left side, it really opens his hips up. He just looks more natural. When I see him shoot, when he ends up over on the left side of the ice, you saw it in the Nashville game. He does have a nice shot when he's able to open his hips up and square his hips to the goal. He never does that on the right side of the ice. From the right side of the ice, his left hip is always what's leading him towards the goal when he shoots. On the left side of the ice, he's more natural over there. He's applicable to the left side as opposed to the right side. It's the same argument that I made about Tuomo Ruutu before he was traded, that Dennis Savard never got into his head. Ruutu could do more from the right side of the ice than he could on the left. He got handcuffed over on the left side of the ice repeatedly, but whenever he found himself over the right side of the ice, he had more success because he could open himself up. Some guys are just better on their off wing, and I think Jack Skilly, I don't know, Jack Skilly's not going to light anything up, but I just wish that before, I mean, my belief is that he's a fourth liner, third liner tops, but before we, you know, get him stuck in kind of what he's become, which is like a 9-minute energy guy on the fourth line, give Jack Skilly, I'm willing to do this based out of the respect that I have for the fact that he's playing the best hockey of his life and he's putting all this effort and he's the one of the guys that's trying to be an energy guy and make a difference on the ice. Give him a chance over on the left side, like I said, to see if he can score a little bit more. It's just something that, I mean, it's one of those little things that I think an adjustment that can be made with him. And it's not like, I mean, Kopechki can play the right side. If Pisani's not at center, he could play either wing. In fact, he's more of a right wing than he is a left, Pisani. And it's not like Brouwer should be stapled to the left wing. Although that goal on Saturday night was fantastic. But again, I mean, one for instance in 23 games isn't... I don't think that you can take too much out of that. And then L.A. on Saturday night, looking forward to that game a lot at the Staples Center. So it should be a lot of fun. L.A. will be coming home from a road trip that they hasn't started out too well for them. But L.A.'s having a little bit of trouble scoring goals right now. So if the Blackhawks can catch them, a little bit tired getting back home and maybe not completely up for that game post traveling back, getting home on Thanksgiving, and then one practice on Friday. Maybe the Blackhawks can catch them. But I expect that to be a great game. Always great games, except, well, there was one game. Two. One, and wasn't it, do you remember the game that the Blackhawks were actually blown out? I believe it was New Year's Day of 08. It was Tate's first season when he blew out his knee. Remember that?
I do. Yeah, they did. I can't recall the score, but if I remember,
it was like 9-2 or something like that.
Yeah, it was obscenely bad.
I'm gonna try to look it up here. While we're doing professional radio.
Always prepared.
You know what? We should while I'm doing that, why don't we talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing on Sunday night? Do you know what we're going to be doing on Sunday night?
I don't. This is news to me.
Wow. I was informed that you're going to be on this thing, too. Sunday night at RadioExposed.net, we are going to be the first official hosts official host, first official guest of the Radio Exposed podcast there at radioexposed.net. You're going to join us, right?
Yes, yes. You got to give me dates, man. I after my travels, the dates are all running together. And
this is going to be particularly
interesting. You know, being married, the holidays, the days and dates get all jacked up. But, yeah, radioexposed.net, check them out. They do their shows Sunday nights on Blog Talk Radio. Lots of good stuff. I haven't caught their last one. I don't know if you have. But lots of great stuff. And like you and I mentioned before, a little chance to get away from the hockey talk for a while and get into some of the more humorous, fun stuff that goes on in our daily lives.
Yeah, and that's going to be at radioexposed.net. It's you know, it's going to be interesting because, you know, it's been a while since on this show that we've done kind of free-form talk about whatever, you know, comes to the top of our heads.
Yes, it has been a while. We really should do a makeshift, maybe a later in the week show after a real professional one where we can kind of kick back and just relax and have some fun. Not
that's an interesting idea that I've been sort of positioning for a while now. But yeah. I mean, back when we used to do non-hockey talk intermingled with the rest of this, exciting hockey analysis, I mean, that was back when I shared things like, see, this is why Sunday night is going to be interesting. I don't know, kind of dangerous as well for me personally, because that was back when, you remember, like, what are the things I used to talk about? Like, I told that story one time about how I stalked the girl to the bar with, you know, remember the girl with the big lips?
Yes.
When I told that story about when I bit that girl in her Virginia,
I was about to mention the bite story, and I mean, these are all, you know, TTMI Radio classics. You need to go back and check them out on the archives if you're a newer listener.
Yeah. So radioexposed.net, Sunday night 8 o'clock over there, blogtalkradio.com/radioexposed. They do an interesting show. I think they encourage live callers, which we don't. I mean, we used to. I don't know if you want to call in. The number is on your screen, 347-857-3781. I want to get out of here. Maybe next time. Couple of Rockford notes. I didn't make it to Peoria on Sunday, and I'm going to tell you why, Superstar. So I wake up on Sunday morning after a long night, and, you know, see, here's the thing. Like, I walk in and out of the house, like, all day long without my keys, and, you know, I take the dog out in the morning, and then we come back in, and I do some stuff, and I take a shower, I get all dressed, and I go back outside with the dog. I come back in, and I was the game on Sunday in Peoria, which I was going down, Rockford Ice Hogs, Peoria Rivermen at the Carver Arena down there in Peoria, started at 3 o'clock. So for me to get there and get situated and everything and all that crap, I wanted to leave by the latest 10:45. It's about 3 hours door-to-door, right? A little bit less than 3 hours of a drive, but you take into account – you know, parking, getting, you know, so about 3 hours. Maybe a stop for a beverage, fill up the fuel, stuff like that. So at 10:45, I go looking for my keys. I can't find my goddamn keys. I have no idea where I put them. I tried to backtrack, and it's a long story, but I eventually found them. But by the time I got them back in my possession, I didn't have enough time to drive down there. So I didn't go, but I did see the game, as I did all three games for the Rockford on the weekend. Now, some injury notes. Brandon Peary, which I left out of today's report. Brandon Peary missed Sunday's game at Peoria. He actually caught a puck to the face in Manitoba on Friday night, and his face blew up damn good. apparently. I haven't seen him. But he missed Sunday's game. I don't think he'll be out much longer. But Brandon Peary, day-to-day with a cheekbone injury. Evan Brophy missed Sunday's game, as well as Ivan Vishnevsky, both with lower body issues. Jeff Tafe was back in after missing five games with his upper body issue. And the only other injury news of note is the regular, well, the professional, the North American professional debut. He's actually been a professional in over there in Europe and Sweden and Norway for 4 or 5 years. Mathis Olin will be making his North American and Ice Hogs debut tomorrow night at the Metro Center. 6:35 start. Rockford does those weird 6:35 starts at home on the weeknights. So, and I'm going to try to make it. I'm trying to make that game tomorrow night because I got no work tomorrow. So, as it turns out, so we're gonna try to make it out there for that game tomorrow night. See the debut of Mathis Olin, but I'm not sure that's going to work out. But that's what's going on with Rockford. Rockford's struggling. They actually had some really good goaltending. Hannu Toivonen actually had two very good performances in Manitoba back-to-back on Thursday and Friday night. The shutout on Thursday, and then another really good performance on Friday in a losing effort. Alec Richards was in the goal on Sunday at Peoria. Played pretty well. Definitely not the reason for the 3-2 shootout loss, but Rockford just, I mean, they're not scoring goals. Jeremy Morin had a couple of goals on the weekend. A couple of one-timers from his left wing type of, well, one was a one-timer, the other one was a wrist shot. Through traffic, nice goals for him. Nick Leddy, very good in the three games. Definitely appears as though at this point Nick Leddy is going to be everything that Stan Bowman cracked him up to be. It's just going to take some time, but very impressed with Nick Leddy. Just, you know, if he's going to be here at age 19, then he definitely needs a full year there in Vancouver, or in Vancouver, in Rockford, and probably even more than that. So when he comes to the NHL level, he's ready to play, and you have no worries about him, and we've talked about that many times. NHL news of note, Mark Savard was cleared for contact today after 6 hours of a battery of tests. 6 hours, Mark Savard, who recently began skating with the team, just no contact. He's now been cleared to take contact in practices with the Boston Bruins. So Mark Savard, even though Peter Chiarelli, the Boston GM, says there's no timetable for his return, I wonder if he's right on schedule, even though there's no timetable.
Yeah, that was nice.
Oh, I kid, don't I? But if you got that fantasy hockey thing, I want to talk about some. If you got those fantasy hockey interests, Mark Savard, it looks like I would say, I mean, who knows? But I would say we're looking more towards Christmas on Mark Savard. But keep him in mind because he's going to step in there, and Boston's. With Mark Savard, Boston they're already a good hockey team. But if he's healthy and he can stay healthy, that's an elite team in the Western Conference or in the Eastern Conference. The East is very top heavy, you know. But there's that. I want to make mention of something. The last time you were on the show, I believe, at the very end of the show, I was talking about Jeff Skinner, and I want to make note of this because I had an email in our league. A guy in our league emailed me this, and it's kind of funny. So at the very end of that show, 2 weeks ago, I made mention that if Jeff Skinner, if you were in a fantasy hockey league and Jeff Skinner was a free agent, and of course this would be if you have a, you know, 8 or 10 teams and you know, I mean, you've got more than 15 guys, 16, 17 guys on a team, which I think most people do. If Jeff Skinner was a free agent, then you were in a league with a bunch of dopes. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, that's what I said.
Yeah, I believe you said you're in the league with a bunch of dumb people.
Yeah, okay. So, and then I said, I better go into our league or all of my leagues and double check to make sure that Jeff Skinner... Well, lo and behold, Superstar, I went into one of our third man in fantasy hockey leagues, and Jeff Skinner was a free agent. So not only was I a dope, but I called everybody at our by association. I accidentally, not on purpose, called everybody in our fantasy hockey league a dope.
That's great.
So I made up for it by immediately picking up Jeff Skinner.
Right, of course.
Who?
Fuck you. Speaking, you know, you mentioned the Eastern Conference. It reminds me of something I saw today. Did you see the New York Islanders, I believe it was a play-by-play guy, get caught with the hot mic over in the last week?
Yeah, Howie Rose.
Yes. That if you didn't get a chance, I caught it on SI.com under the Extra Mustard tab there. There's a bunch of fun, goofy stuff that they do on a daily basis, and a nice little video of him getting kind of caught with his pants down, so to speak, with a live mic and talking about the Woeful Islanders. Pretty funny listen.
I also want to mention one thing, going back to Rockford. Someone's listening to us, because I just got an email. I actually got another email I want to talk about in a minute here. So I know two people are at least listening to the show right now. I did leave out Kyle Beach. Kyle Beach, and I wrote this on the website today, Kyle Beach did leave Sunday's game, did not return, missed the second, third overtime and shootouts competition on Sunday in Peoria with what definitely appeared to be a lower body injury. There was a collision just inside the Peoria blue line. The Ice Hogs were on a power play. He collided with Brett Sone. And Beach sort of was slow to get up, and he kind of hobbled. So, it looked like a leg injury. He hobbled to join the play a little bit, and Peoria immediately cleared the zone, and then he slowly made his way back to the bench. There was only about a minute and a half left in the period, but he never did return. So, not sure where Kyle Beach stands at this stage, but, that's your I think that's all. I don't know. I don't even know what time it is. I don't even know what day it is.
8:57 on a Tuesday.
Okay. I do want to plug one thing. There's a show, and we talked about this last week with Mike Peck. So if you go to icehogs.com or I'll figure it out. But if you go to hey, Superstar, did you know that there's a new WWE champion?
I did. Sorry for the delay there. I did hear that there was a new WWE champion. And I believe, if I've read this correctly, he's actually a reality TV show star. You can probably fill it in more than I. He was on Road Rules, Real World, I'm Going to Kill You, Inferno thing. What the hell was he on?
Mike was on, talking about The Miz, and he is awesome. But Mike was on, I believe Road Rules, top of my head. But yeah, he was on a lot of those Real World Road Rules challenges. Drink some more coffee, Block. I got three empty cups in front of me. I got two more left. But then he's I don't know, but he's improved a lot. And I just mentioned that because I'm looking for my email right now. Somebody emailed one of my hockey addresses, and I'm looking for this other thing. Again, professional stuff here.
Yeah.
Here it is. I found it. I think. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Somebody else needs to read my emails during the show and then hand. This would be great if like we had a producer here that would read my emails and just pass the stuff to me and highlight the, you know, if this was actually a real professional radio show, not like we kind of pretend that it is. It would be so good because then I wouldn't have to read through all this crap while I try to talk on the show.
Yeah, and you know it's so great that I, you know, you can leave the show up to me to kind of carry it and be a filler for what's you know for you. But yeah, that's not going to happen either.
All right, I want you to go to this one. I want to plug Matt Prefontaine, who does the pre and post game on Ice Hogs Radio. And we talked about this last week, Mike Peck. Usually Mike Peck does this, but on Monday nights on WNTA.com at 6 o'clock, there's an hour-long show in a bar, Swilligan's Pub in Rockford, that they do, and they usually have two Rockford IceHogs players in as guests, and they talk and have a discussion. And last night, Mark Bernard, the general manager of the IceHogs, and who also works for the Blackhawks in association, had they did this hour long talk. So Bernard and last night's guests were also Brandon Bolig and Alec Richards. Go to themanadvantagevlog.com. The show's up there for you to listen. Last night it was Matt Prefontaine. It wasn't Matt Peck, it was Matt Prefontaine, Courtney King, who is the sort of like the sideline reporter there in Rockford. You know, so they conducted the interview last night. I want you to pay special close attention if you listen to this. The Mark Bernard interview was interesting, and when you listen to it, you'll understand why it's interesting. I don't want to make a comment about it just right now, but there's something in that Mark Bernard interview that's very interesting, and I'd like to leave it to the listeners to reflect back to me on this, and maybe we'll talk about it next week. And also very interesting interviews with Brandon Bolig and Alec Richards. So a lot of information there. It was good stuff. So just wanted to plug that. Check that out. Anything else?
I'll have to give it a listen.
Anything else you would like to plug? Next week on that show, Kyle Beach, 6 o'clock, Monday night, November 29th. So, you know, in preparation for our show, listen next week, WNTA.com, 6 o'clock. Kyle Beach and Garnet Exelby will be the guests on Hog Talk. Should be good stuff.
That should be real good stuff.
All right. Let's do some emails.
Emails.
Have you read any of this story past periodically? In the news, there's been reporting on this Wirtz family ongoing dispute over Bill Wirtz's estate.
You know, I caught some of it a while, I don't know, not too long ago, but...
September and October.
Yeah, I have not seen anything recently about it, no.
Basically, the gist of it is that... Peter and the sisters have now joined in, and they're bringing Rocky to court, basically over the final piece of the Bill Wirtz estate that hasn't been resolved. That Rocky actually is 50%, well, 51% owner of, but Bill Wirtz's portion is in dispute. So I'm looking.
Do you know what aspect of the estate that was?
It's one of the liquor distribution. I'm looking for it in my email because I don't remember off the top of my head. You can tell that I got here 15 minutes before we started. If anybody wants to produce this show for free and sit next to me and watch my handshake as I drink my fifth cup of coffee in the last hour. But you gotta be able to do pro bono work. We'll go out to eat afterwards and talk about how crappy this show was.
Bring your $10.04. Mr. Submarine isn't cheap.
Yeah. It'll be $20.08, Mr. Submarine. All right, anyway. Yeah, they're basically the gist of it is Rocky's been slow in getting the financial reports for the last 3 years to his brother and sisters, and they're upset about it, and they're in court battling over it. I'll have more on that in whenever I get the chance to. Okay, emails. Okay. This person, from what I wrote about today, about Steve Larmer and the Hall of Fame, he says it's regarding. This person says, I'm a lifelong Blackhawks fan of 42 years, and I can't believe that you would insinuate that Steve Larmer wasn't one of the best right wings of his era. All right. Let me just stop right there. What I should have written, this is my error, okay? What I should have written, what I meant to write, was that when you consider, this is what I did write, when you consider that in his era, in his entire tenure in the National Hockey League, that Steve Larmer was never voted either the first or second team right wing all-star. He was a right wing his entire career. He was never voted first or second team all-star in his entire career. Okay? When you consider that, my point was this. I'm not making a case, or at least I didn't in that blurb that I wrote today about the Hockey News list of best players by position, nor the notes that I did about Blackhawks in the Hall of Fame and whether or not Steve Larmer belongs. I didn't make a case either way. I was just stating that if you were a person trying to state a case against Steve Larmer going into the Hall of Fame, I think that that's the first thing that you can look to is that, you know, it's easy to point out that he didn't have 500 goals, but at the other side of that argument, you could just say, well, his career was cut short, and considering he retired at 34, and players of his ability tend to stick around to 38, 39, 40, that, you know, I mean, he 50, 60 goals over another 4 years, he would have gotten that. He would have had the 500 goals, and he would have been a Hall of Famer. So I think you got to ignore the goal total and start looking at other things. So if you're picking out a reason why Steve Larmer doesn't belong, if you're one of those people, I think that that's the first thing that you can look to. You could say that he was never, because when going back to what we talked about, I believe the last time you were on Superstar, when we talked about the Hall of Fame, in my mind, it's the way that I've always done it, When I think about Hall of Fame, to me, if you're a person that's educated on the topic, and I'm pretty educated on Steve Larmer, and you know, we talked about this, but going by this assessment, this judgment process, you say the name, and your first inclination, yes or no, that's it. If you have to debate it at all, then the person's not a Hall of Famer. And I believe that night, if I recall correctly, that I had to think about it as much as I love Steve Larmer, one of my favorite Blackhawks of all time, considering that I'm 33 and I grew up in the stadium during that era. And I would still say, and I don't think anybody would debate me on this, I mean, it's fans that have just been fans of the last 2 or 3 years maybe, but Steve Larmer with Dennis Savard and Al Secord, best line that I've ever seen personally on the Blackhawks. Period. But when you can, you know, I look at the Hall of Fame. It's not a charity case, you know. It's the elite players of the sport and the elite coaches of the sport and the elite, you know, they call it builders, but you know, which is coaches, executives, all that kind of stuff. I think elite. So if you're going to make that argument that Larmer doesn't belong in there, that's the first thing you can point to, that he was never a first-team or a second-team All-Star at any point in his career. And he wasn't a perennial All-Star player either. So, you know, I don't like to, you know, to think that. But I can accept that point of view. You know, the things that he does have working for him is that he was a great, you know, he was a very, very good to great player his entire time in the league. The Calder Trophy, the Stanley Cup of the Rangers that he was a part of. He wasn't just an innocent bystander, Eddie Olczyk. And that Iron Man streak, 884 consecutive games. That, you know, I mean, if you go back in time and let's just say those games that he missed sitting out of on his contract don't count. You know, but they, I mean, they do, but just say those don't count. He wouldn't have beaten the Doug Jarvis record anyway because he eventually did get hurt in his third month with the Rangers, second or third month with the Rangers. But, you know, so he wouldn't have beaten Doug Jarvis's record anyway, but he did have that streak. And his consistency is, you know, tremendous over the course of his career. You know, I'm not making the argument one way or another. I just was pointing out that by that, you could say that he wasn't one of the elite players at his position of that era. And I suppose you can argue the other way, but by that, I could understand that argument. Do you have any problem with Chris Chelios, the Hockey News naming Chris Chelios the best Chicago Blackhawks defenseman in franchise history?
No. I mean, I think it's to be expensive. I mean, you got to consider the source. Obviously, they look at he's from Chicago, and obviously a lot of great defensemen have come through here. Was he the best maybe of all time?
I didn't see Pierre Palat play.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, things that we haven't seen. So I have no problem saying that he could be the best defenseman in the last, since what, 1980?
Yeah, I would say that if you force me to choose one over the other, I would take Chris Chelios over Doug Wilson. That's not to say that Doug Wilson wasn't great, and he's not number two, you know, or, I mean, in terms of what I saw, not all time, but Doug Wilson, you know, in terms of the Blackhawks that I saw play, I would say that Doug Wilson would be the second. You know,
I agree.
I'd go Chelios, Wilson. It's too early for me to say, put Duncan Keith in that category. Or Brent Seabrook, or Brian Camp. I mean, it's too early. But, yeah, I'd go those guys 1-2. As far as who's number three, oh, geez, you know. I mean, it's I don't know. I don't want to have that conversation right now. We don't have time. But
oh, but I was so hoping you would.
Yeah, I don't want to have that conversation. I was kind of shocked. Considering how much, you know, the Hockey News was very giving to, and not that it's the wrong thing, but they, you know, they put a lot of old timers. We're talking about 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, in the top echelon, and most of them, by what all things that we've read, are deserving. But considering that, I was kind of surprised that Jeremy Roenick is listed as the third best Blackhawks center of all time.
Interesting.
I mean, my only thought is, and I wrote about it, is Max Bentley, you know, did two things that Jeremy Roenick never did. Art Ross trophies and a Hart trophy. Two Art Ross trophies and a Hart trophy. So, you know, I mean, Max Bentley, I mean, the Bentley brothers themselves are two figures in Blackhawk history that are long forgotten. Like, Bill Mozienko gets mentioned all the time because of the three fastest goals. You know, Mush March, you know, he, because of the name, it's sort of a name that link, you know, that pops up from time to time. But the Bentley brothers, I mean, are all but forgotten. And the Pony line with Mozienko was, you know, I suppose that historians could say that that was the best line in Blackhawks history. could argue that. You know, it's certainly right there. So, I don't know. I was just a little bit surprised by that. And I'm a huge German Roenick fan. I'm not, but... Okay. You know, this just came in a little while ago, and I don't even know. Maybe I should... All right. Apparently, something's got going on over at Second City Hockey involving my name.
Yeah. It all stemmed from the Dustin Bufflin piece.
All right. Yeah. Someone just emailed me a screenshot. I don't know what this is. Okay. You've seen it. I haven't seen it. So
yeah. No. I saw it. I don't
talk
have
about
enough
it while
in front
I read
of
it
me.
So I can respond to it.
Yeah. It referred to the fact that your opinion about Dustin Bufflin and what he's done so far this year, and the one post that they can kind of sum it up was that. They were questioning whether you were thinking that the Dustin Bufflin points that he has this year as a defenseman in Atlanta would translate from point to point for playing forward with the Hawks this year. And from what I gathered from it, Chris Cook has the same opinion as you do on the subject, because his name was also brought up almost in conjunction with yours.
Really?
But, yeah, if you get a chance to read it, it's, you know, it's a typical message board. But as I said to you earlier, the best post there was, get me an exorcist, Chris Block has been possessed by Barry Rosner.
Wow. And that's not what I have in front of me. That's interesting. Yeah, that's not what this person sent me. I have a screenshot of it here. Okay.
I believe it was on the Tuesday morning update for Second City. You can check under the archive page and find it there.
I'll have to look at that later because what I have in front of me is something different. And it's actually, this is weird, because it's from McClure, Matt McClure, who, I mean, I don't understand this. I mean, I really don't. It's interesting, but I'm kind of confused. That I don't understand what his point is, first of all. All right, let me address what you just said. Okay, as far as if someone's saying, like, why am I making the comparison, Bufflin versus Boland?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So what is the point there, then? I mean, what's their argument?
You know, I didn't hear your point, and like I said, I'm hearing everything through the message boards, but from what it sounded like, people were comparing, obviously, the Bufflin to Boland argument, saying that, you know, you've never been a Bufflin guy, you've always been kind of a Boland guy, and, you know, comparing them, look where they are now, you know, Bufflin's lighting it up, and Nate Boland obviously struggled, and you know, it almost felt like they were trying to make you eat crow for backing Dave Boland over Dustin Bufflin.
No, you mean the reverse, because I've never been, okay, first of all, understand something, okay? Cause, and this is going to go into what I'll read here, what McClure wrote about me, I guess, on the... He uses me... I don't understand what... I'll get to this in a minute, because he uses me to make a point or emphasize a point that he's making, but he's not... I'm confused. Here's the thing. I think I've been extremely consistent here in what I've been saying. When you look at, at the time I said it, the day that the trade was made, or whenever I first reacted to it, whether it was on this show or someone else's show, whenever I first reacted to it, because I wasn't updating the site regularly over the summer because I was very, very busy. But when that happened, I immediately said, if it came down to a decision between Bolin and Bufflin, I choose Bufflin. Now, is Bufflin perfect? No. But I know what Dave Bolin is, and Dave Bolin's a third line center. Dustin Bufflin is a 6'4", 260-pound guy who has great hands, who we know is a game changer, and guys like him just don't come. Learn your history. I say this all the time. Learn from history. History tells us that a guy like him does not come around very often. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that he's the equivalent of Cam Neely or Al Secord or even Keith Kachuk. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, we know what Dave Bolin is, or at least I do. There's a lot of people that want Dave Bolin to be more than he is. Dave Bolin is third line center. He's a $3.375 million third line center. Dustin Bufflin, while no, he has not completely, when he left here, at that point, he had not completely reached his potential. There was more there to him. So, in my mind, it was a no-brainer. Dustin Bufflin over Dave Bolin. You can make the argument that they were both integral factors in the success of the playoffs. Sure. But again, I think you can find a guy. I mean, it's no big – when people talk about Dave Bolin, what is the thing that they always bring up about Dave Bolin? It's like, oh, he got under the skin of Sedin and Thornton in the playoffs. It's like, how hard is that really? I mean, come on. Yeah, he did it. He was a good player, and his best days as a Blackhawk were centering for Marty Havlett. He did a great job in that. But you know what? He's got a bad back. And, again, learning from history, we know the history of guys with bad backs in this town. But anyway, that's my stance on it. So as far as the comparison that I made on today's site, it wasn't saying anything in specifically. It was just, okay, here's Dustin Bufflin, 21 games, 7 goals, 12 assists, 19 points. $3 million. Here's Dave Bolin, 17 games, 1 goal, 3 assists, 4 points, plus 2, $3.375 million. Yeah, one's a center and one's a defenseman. But what is the argument always, See, here's the thing. And I'm going to get to McClure in a second. Let's just do McClure so I get it out of the way. Because I don't understand this. This is what he wrote, and thanks to Mike for sending this over. I guess thank you. And I'll have to email McClure because I don't get this. I don't understand where he's coming from here. I don't know if I've angered him or what the deal is. Because I like McClure. Friendly with McClure at the very least. I've been around him a little bit. I like McClure. How many times do you think, as an aside, how many times, Superstar, do you think I'm going to have to say I like McClure before it resonates and people can comprehend it?
It should have been just one, but... Yeah, you might want to do it a couple more times just to make sure.
Okay, I like McClure, okay? But I don't understand what he's doing here. This is what he typed November 22nd, so yesterday at 2:23. All these alleged heroics from Buff don't change the fact that he can't defend anybody and frequently leaves his partner out, hung out to dry, to do his Dustin Orr impersonation. Okay? He continues, they didn't have any room for his salary anywhere in the roster. It was pretty commonly held belief about 10 seconds after he signed his deal that he was overpaid, no matter how much Chris Block wants to ignore that. Okay. And what he does is he links to a tweet that I put out on Sunday in which I said Dustin Bufflin, another game-winning goal that forced the Islanders' losing streak to 13. Bufflin leads the NHL in game-winning goals, and then I make a comment, but, oh, I forgot, he sucks in the regular season. I put sucks in quotes. Okay, one of the reasons for me putting that and it's just a fact. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien, 21 games, 7 goals, 12 assists, 19 points. It's really convenient for people that are, fall on the other side of this argument, Bolin versus Byfuglien, to ignore now that he's having a good, you know, good regular season. That's the only point I'm trying to make. You know, if your excuse is that he doesn't show up in the regular season, and he's not, you know, he doesn't play up to his potential, and there's all this unrealized potential, then at least accept the fact or acknowledge the fact that Dustin Byfuglien is off to a great start in Atlanta. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm noting. I'm not saying anything. I'm just noting that he's off to a good start. And my argument from the very beginning, and you know what? It's an argument that I believe I first posed on SecondCityHockey.com in the summer roundtable. So I don't understand what McClure, and I'll have to email him because I don't because again, he says it's pretty commonly held belief about 10 seconds after he signed his deal that he was overpaid no matter how much Chris Block wants to ignore that. What am I ignoring? I mean, he's using me to emphasize a point that he's trying to make, but it's not something. It's a phantom stance of mine that he's using against me. Am I saying that, you know, the Dustin Byfuglien, while a Blackhawk, was worth $3 million? No, I never said that. I said he was overpaid. Is he trying
to say, you know what? If I remember right, both you and I were one and two of the people who were overcritical about Byfuglien, you know, not performing in the regular season, taking games, if not weeks almost off from performing the way we knew he could. So, yeah, I don't know where he's coming with that. I know I haven't heard you say anything.
If you're going to use my name to emphasize your point or whatever, I mean, at least get it right. I mean,
yeah,
you
definitely have enough opinions where you can find an argument somewhere.
I don't understand. I just don't understand. Like, what is he trying to say there? Is he trying to say that I'm out there saying that the Blackhawks have room as currently constructed for Dustin Byfuglien on their roster? I mean, that's kind of. I'm trying to make sense of it. I don't get it. You know, and to what you just said. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things I think with power forwards is kind of unfair, and that all these guys that are big, because they stick out to you so much. You know, I mean, I mentioned Dustin Penner earlier on. I mean, there's so much more that's expected of those guys, but because of that physical size, people feel that they should be dominating at every time they step out on the ice, and that's clearly not the case. You know, so it's a little bit unfair to those guys, I'll say that. But no, Dustin Byfuglien, certainly we expected more. We should expect more from him. We should expect more from a lot of guys. And he didn't deliver at points during the regular season. I would say also, though, that, you know, he's a defenseman. He is learning the forward position. All right, I got more here. I mean, we're almost out of time. I don't get it. I don't understand what he's trying to say. All these alleged heroics, how much Chris Block wants to know. I don't understand.
I don't get it either.
And then this guy underneath him, this shy Blackhawks, whoever that is. Also, Chris Block would have Big Byfuglien. It's hard for me to take this comment seriously. Also, Chris Block would have Big Byfuglien here as a power forward, decidedly not the position he's having success in over Atlanta. Okay, right there. You know, if you're saying that you could make the same, you know, a similar argument to say that, okay, Dustin Byfuglien, because, you know, here's the thing. It really amazes me the amount of negativity, dismissal, and, you know, I mean, just the attitude towards Byfuglien, you know, here in Black. I mean, I don't know exactly where it comes from, I don't know what it's all about. I just know that it makes me really uncomfortable. You know, I mean, you know, he's a guy that I don't think should be on defense. I think he should be on power. I think he should be a forward. Power forward's an overused. I think he should be a forward on the wing. I think that's his best position. I think ultimately, if Atlanta's going to, you know, intends on being a great team, I think Dustin Bufflin's going to be a winger on that team. You know, I mean, it's amazing as great as Dustin Bufflin's playing. And there's a lot of talent on that Atlanta team, but as you know, amazing as this is, on this day, Atlanta is a 500 hockey club and not a playoff team. You know, so as great as he's doing, he's not on a playoff team. On you know, as a defenseman, you know, I mean, the comparisons are ridiculous. In a lot of ways, you can't compare a guy who's on Atlanta as opposed to, you know, playing with the kind of talent that the elite talent that's here in Chicago. No matter how, I mean, I think Evander Kane's going to be a brilliant player. It looks like Burmistrov's going to be a great player. But Taves and Kane and Hosa are a few notches ahead of those guys right now. So you could state the case that Bufflin's success in Atlanta is even more impressive considering that it's coming from the blue line and that he's not playing with the type of guys that are here in Chicago. So you could state that case. You know, you could also, you know, if you're going to be a contrarian, you could say, well, Bufflin, you know, he's just being allowed to do whatever he wants to do there, which was, you know, my concerns watching him come up through Norfolk. And then on defense, his coach, Mike Haviland, who's the defensive coach of the Blackhawks now, didn't really have him in any kind of a discipline structure, Bufflin. Bufflin was just allowed to go out and do whatever he wanted to do, and that was part of Bufflin's struggles defensively as a defenseman when he came up. And you still see him in Atlanta. My take on it has always been Bufflin versus Boland, and Bufflin is what he is, and he's off to a bad start, and Bufflin is on defense, and he's doing what he's doing down there in Atlanta, and I think it's notable. I mean, don't you think that if Bufflin wasn't doing well and Dave Boland was doing great right now, that I'd be hearing it like crazy?
Yes.
Okay. And if Dave Boland, I mean, I would expect that if Dave Boland's healthy and in the lineup every game for the next 17, 18 games, that at the midway point of the season, you know, this next little bit, he has one goal now. Let's say he scores four goals between now and then. Everyone will be jumping on board the Dave Boland bandwagon and say, look, he's starting to heat up and he's coming around. It's like, well, he's still a third-line center. And the thing that he does best is get under the skin of the Sedins and Joe Thornton. You can find a guy to do that for $1.5 million. For a population, for a hockey fans nowadays, they're so obsessed with what guys make, and all that over the summer when people were talking about how bringing in guys for $500,000 was great roster moves, dismissing the effect that the actual on ice effect and the ability of these players, Pisani, John Scott, Brian Bickle. You know, now you're in this position where everyone's trying to get rid of John Scott. Pisani's been doing better, but for the first month and a half of the season, he was a zero. And Brian Bickle, who is playing his way off of the NHL team. You know. And here you've got a guy who's a third line center. Well, I don't think he'll ever be a second-line center, but he's paid like one. Yes, Dale Talon overpaid Dustin Bufflin. When he gave to Bufflin that contract, he was paying Dustin Bufflin in terms of potential. You can make the same argument about the Patrick Sharp contract. Yes, today when you look at that Patrick Sharp contract, you could say that it's a bargain. But the day that he signed it, I remember writing, and I remember other people saying, wow, that's a lot of money for Patrick Sharp. Now, people forget that it was 4 years ago that Patrick Sharp was centering the fourth line for Michael Holmquist and Tony Salmelainen. The Blackhawks paid Patrick Sharp based on a great stretch of hockey, and it was also based on potential. In that case, it worked out great. Nobody's complaining about it now. You know, and to the point about, because it's said here in another thing that I was, it's about how Bufflin didn't want to be a forward. Well, you know what? Patrick Sharp didn't want to be a center either. Because after he switched from his natural position to center over to left wing, he had he found a lot of success, and he liked it a lot more because there's less responsibility on the wing than there is the center. But ultimately, and I was beating this drum last year too. Sam Feld of the Committed Indian and Second City Hockey was beating that drum too. The best thing for the Blackhawks was Sharp play center, and eventually he moved back to center, and it worked out great for the Blackhawks. The same thing, you know, as a coaching staff and as management, you've got to do that to Bufflin. You've got to say, no, the best thing for us as a team and our success and us, you know, trying to repeat and win Stanley Cups year after year after year is you being a power forward, but you being a left or a right wing on lines, creating space, creating habit, and be able to take over games with your size and ability, you know, when we need it from time to time. I mean, there's a lot of potential that was left on the table there with Bufflin that Bolin doesn't have, and that's what my only argument has ever been, and I continue to have that argument, and I'll always maintain that argument. You know, I mean, the only way I talked about nine times out of ten, the only way that I would concede, I would say, you know what. Trading him was the right thing to do. Now, first of all, I don't know. I don't think that Rick Dudley even makes that deal if Bufflin's not in it. Rick Dudley's not a stupid man. I don't think he takes that deal if Bolin's in that deal. I think if he does, it's a much different deal. I don't know that Jeremy Morin's a part of it, or if Jeremy Morin is, I don't think you get both of those New Jersey draft picks. But let's just say that he would be willing to you know, whatever. But I would say that I would concede that trading Bufflin was the right thing to do. I would theoretically would. If Dustin Bufflin went to the Blackhawks, went to his coaches or went to Stan Bowman and said, you know what, pulled him aside and said, you know what, I hate playing forward. I want to play D, and if you're not gonna play me D 20 minutes a night, you know, 20 minutes a night, then I want to be traded. If that happened, not saying it did, but if it did, then I would concede, you know what, he's gotta go. Okay? That's the only scenario that I would say that you keep Bolin and you trade Bufflin. It's the only way. And we don't know that happened. And I imagine that if it did happen, the Blackhawks would find a way to get it out there. Just like with the Dale Talon father's funeral story, that neither Dale Talon nor the players wanted to get out there. The Blackhawks eventually found a way to get it out to the media. So if Bufflin actually said that, I'm sure we'll hear it at some point. But you know, but unless it you know, unless that conversation happened, I can't. From my view, please be respectful of my opinion. I'm respectful of other people's opinions. In my view, it was the wrong move. Dustin Bufflin is a bigger impact player than Dave Bolin, and that's the way I see it. So. That'll do it. Next week, November 29th, we'll be back on Monday, Superstar. Can you handle it? Maybe not. All right. Monday, November 29th, 8 p.m., we're going to be moving to Mondays. I think it'll be permanent from here on out, Monday, November 29th, 2010, blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. And also check us out. I know I'll be there. I don't know if Superstar will be there. It doesn't sound like
he's. I'll be there. Come on. It'll be
good. He knows he's going to be there. On radioexposed.net on the 28th. 8 o'clock.
Oh, that's a must-listen to radio right there.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I listened to I listened to their show this past week, and I took notes. I got a lot of things that I want to. I mean, there was a lot of interesting stuff. Bathroom etiquette. I don't know. They were talking about justifying their hatreds of certain things, and a lot of fun stuff. Topical discussions going on over there, and we're going to join that. I think at least for half an hour. And not my show, but I'm going to be on that show. All right, Superstar, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, man, as always. And we will talk to you down the line.
All right, yeah, everybody, thanks for listening, playing along with us here. And, November 29th, 8 p.m. Central, blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin if you want to listen live, and then iTunes and wherever the hell else you usually check us out. I guess that's it. The show was operated on the laptop tonight, and I'm just now having an issue. All right,
good time.
Good night.
In the house tonight.